You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, the tale of one tricky caterpillar. Imagine this for a life story. You're a butterfly, or you will be one day, and you start out as an egg, laid on just the right kind of flower. Now, you hatch on the flower, eating some seeds and flower parts, and then when you get to be just the right size, you drop off the flower, and you land on the ground. And once you're on the ground, you wait for some red ants to come by. And if the ants come by, they smell you. And they're good at smelling, we know that. And they try to figure out if you are one of them, or maybe you're something good to eat. Okay, now since you are smart and you're a very talented caterpillar, you can make yourself smell just like those red ants. And so they carry you back to the nest. And once inside the nest, the ants get a little more discriminating. If you happen to be picked up by the wrong species of red ant, they kill you. But if the right species of ant comes along to your rescue, well, you are in luck. You get treated just like a king. Oh, well, maybe more like a queen. Joining me now to talk about what happens next at the ant's nest is my guest, Jeremy A. Thomas. He is professor of ecology at Oxford University in England, and he's on the line with us. Thank you for talking with us tonight, Dr. Thomas.
Hello.
Did I get that story right?
Yes, absolutely perfect.
And so what happens once these caterpillars get into the nest? What happens?
Well, once they're in the nest, they persuade the ants, because they mimic them by scent, to actually tolerate them, and they carry them into their brood chambers, and there they feed them directly as if they were ant brood. And they live there for up to 2 years, and they soon become enormous, sort of 100 times bigger than the ants.
Wow. And how do they persuade the ants Now, the ants basically think that they have a queen here. They feed it like
a
queen.
Right. That's right. We've known for some years that they used chemistry and chemical mimicry to get into the ant's nest, but we couldn't figure out for many years why it was that the ants actually fed these caterpillars in preference to their own young, and why indeed if the nest was disturbed, they rescued the caterpillars first before their own young. And we now know that the caterpillar and the chrysalis, come to that, are making sounds that mimic the ant sounds. And ant grubs are actually mute. They can't make any noises. But the adult ants can. And mm-hmm. We recently discovered that the queen ants make different sounds from the worker ants, that's the ordinary ants in the colony. And it's, in fact, the queen ant that the caterpillar and the chrysalis are mimicking.
All right, let's listen to some of those sounds. First, let's listen to the sound that the queen ant makes, and we'll play that right now. There's nothing wrong with your radio. That's the sound. Right? It's really... Oh, okay. That was the sound of the queen ant, correct?
That's right, yes.
All right, now let's listen to the sound that the caterpillar makes trying to mimic the queen ant. Now, that I could tell the difference.
Yes, you're quite right. To human ears, it isn't a very convincing story because, in fact, these sounds we're hearing have many components, and ants only hear or react to certainly parts of them. For example, they react to the dominant frequency and the pulse length and the pulse repetition frequency. So it's only part of the sound waves that the ants are reacting to. And those are the ones the caterpillars are making and the chrysalis are making that are absolutely spot on and the same as the queen ants. But there's a lot of other noise that they're making that we can hear with our ears, and either the ants don't hear or they certainly don't react to it. If I could make an analogy, it's not exactly a precise one, but it's fairly close. It's a bit like having two very different instruments, a violin and, say, a tuba or a trombone. And they make really rather different noises, but they can play the same tune. And in this case, the ants are recognizing one tune, the queen ant's tune.
Is it well known that ants make sounds like this?
Well, it's been known for many years that ants make sounds, mm-hmm. but it was thought to be a very simple signal, mainly just to convey alarm in a colony. But what is new is to show that within an ant society, different members of that society are making different noises, and the ants are reacting in different ways when they hear that noise. So in this case, it's new to show that any queen ant of any species is creating different sounds from the worker ants. There is actually quite an overlap, but some of the sounds are quite distinctive. And crucially, when we play the sounds of queen ants back to worker ants, they react in different ways than when we play back their own sounds.
Very, very interesting. And so these moths, they stay inside the nest and they get fed royally like they were a queen ant.
Yes, indeed they do. In normal times, when there's enough food around, they don't have to be any more perfect mimics than just the ants' own grubs, and they get fed in turn along with the ants. But what happens very often in the wild, or from time to time in the wild, is that there are periods when food is short, and then the ants have this very, very strict hierarchy. In terms of extreme stress and extreme starvation, they actually eat their own young, starting with the eggs and then the small ant grubs and then the bigger ones and then their pupae. And it's at this stage that the caterpillars have a terrific advantage, because when times are really tough in the nest, the ants actually will butcher their own young and feed them to these caterpillars.
Mm-hmm. And so at what point do they emerge out of the nest and take a life of their own?
They emerge as an adult butterfly in the nest. The chrysalis is formed inside the ant's nest and makes the same sounds. Actually, it makes even louder sounds than the caterpillar that is an even closer mimic of the queen ant. But the chrysalis is formed very near the surface of the earth, so it only has an inch or two to get out of a passage. And it splits open and crawls out as a butterfly with very small wings, and it then climbs up a leaf and blows its wings up and flies about for 2 or 3 weeks like an ordinary butterfly.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, thank you for taking time to be with us today. That's a terrific story, Dr. Head.
Thank you.
Dr. Thomas. Jeremy Thomas is professor of ecology at Oxford University in England and stayed up late with us tonight, Dr. Thomas. Thank you very much for staying up late there in Great Britain for us.